Some of the most heinous murders are the ones you've never even heard of. From Michael Ojibwe and Reach Freaks Media comes Invisible Choir, a new form of investigative true crime storytelling that brings the most depraved and under-investigated crimes to life.
They slammed the kid on the ground and stabbing their baby out here in the middle of...
They're stabbing their baby?
With actual audio from the events, including 911 calls, police interrogations, and confessions.
Shot my wife in the temple of her head, and I put her in the freezer. So I checked on her at night, and I did.
We'll take you on an unforgettable emotional journey to the marginalized communities and crime scenes themselves to bring visibility to the unseen. Download Invisible Choir today on Apple Podcast or wherever you listen.
Before we begin this week's episode of Morbidology, I'd like to mention a new podcast that I've been binging. It's called Kitchen Survival Guide, and it's a podcast to bring you culinary education. Each week, they have a new educational episode on a variety of topics, from food culture and culinary history, to food safety and sanitation and cooking techniques. This week's episode was on ancient Chinese food culture and the salt industry. But of course, my favourite episode has been the one on Halloween candy. As someone who enjoys cooking at home, this podcast has been a gem, especially during the pandemic when we can't go out to our favourite restaurants. They even offer an interactive curriculum up on their Facebook group, which you can follow along with the podcast lectures. The Kitchen Survival Guide podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Click the link in my show notes and subscribe. Welcome to Morbidology, the podcast. I'm your host, Emily G. Thompson, author of Unsolved Child Murders, Cults Uncovered, and co-author of Unsolved Murders, True Crime Cases Uncovered. Join me weekly as I uncover some of the world's most heinous murders. More than 1 million Australians are active users of the dating app Tinder, with those numbers rising by at least 5% each day. The app was created in 2012, and it truly exploded, completely erasing the social stigma that had surrounded online dating for many years. However, 2 years later, a young woman's death exposed the dangers that online dating can expose people to. The case was thrust into the spotlight when it was uncovered that the last moments of the young woman's life had been caught on audio. Warina Wright was a 26-year-old woman who lived in North Island, New Zealand. She worked at a Kiwi Bank call centre and lived in an apartment with her sister, Reza. They both attended Parirua's Seventh-day Adventist Church, where their mother, Beth, was a deacon. In a way, Marina, who was known as Ree by her loved ones, was a mother figure to her younger sister, and even to their own mother. Ree was saving to buy a bigger house for herself and her sister. She was a passionate animal rights advocate who once wrote to New Zealand's Parliament, a appealing for tougher penalties for those who commit animal cruelty. On their website, she wrote, "This is something I strongly believe in, and seeing how people in New Zealand treat animals has truly made me ashamed of this country. When I see an animal in pain, to me it's exactly the same as seeing a child in pain." In fact, Rhee had dreamed of filling her home with unwanted animals. She was the joker of the family and was always playing practical jokes on her sister. She was also the responsible one who always looked out for her sister and was very protective. As Reza said, "We really only had each other most of the time. She made sure I was okay and she was responsible." Rhee loved gaming, anime and photography. She was extremely reliable and intelligent, and as her sister said, she valued smarts over looks, but she was lucky to have both. In July of 2014, Rhee went to attend the Gold Coast wedding of her friend, Hayley Eisen. Rhee had been enjoying her vacation so much that she decided to extend her stay. She had spent time at Australia Zoo, went skydiving and scaled Q1, one of the world's tallest buildings. On the 7th of August, Rhee had arranged a date with 28-year-old Gable Tosti. The two had connected on Tinder 6 days prior and decided to meet at a surf shop in a busy nightclub district. They went to a bar before going back to Gable's Avalon apartment in the heart of Surfer's Paradise, just off the Gold Coast Highway. Here, they listened to music, drank some of Gable's home distilled vodka, and then had sex. At around 2:30 a.m., one of Gable's neighbours called police to report that she had seen a woman falling off a balcony. When police arrived at the scene, they found the lifeless body of Rhee. She had fallen 14 stories to the ground. According to several people who lived in the apartments, they heard loud noises, screams and raised voices coming from Gable's apartment, shortly before Rhee was seen falling from the balcony. When police went to Gable's apartment, however, he wasn't there. The following morning, Gable handed himself in to police and was questioned for more than 2 hours. He was extremely uncooperative with police, had refused to answer their questions, and was then taken to Southport Police Station for forensic testing. Gable was already known to police. Back in 2004, he was the mastermind behind a $30,000 fake identification racket. Gable and 2 of his friends produced at least 500 fake IDs and then sold them for $60 each. They were all placed on probation orders and given 200 hours of community service, after being sentenced for aggravated forgery. In fact, Gable was also facing charges of assault on police, obstruction of police, and public nuisance, which related to an incident at Surfer's Paradise back in January, wherein he was involved in a police chase that reached speeds of 200 kilometres per hour. Regional Crime Coordinator Detective Superintendent David Hutchinson said that they were treating the death as suspicious as a matter of procedure. During a news conference, he said, "In all cases like this, any sudden death which can't be explained, we treat as suspicious right from the start, to ensure we determine what occurred." One of the first things investigators wanted to do was to question any neighbours or people in the area who may have seen something or heard something before Rhee fell to her death. One neighbour, Delwyn Gruby, said that she had been left traumatised by the event and what she heard. She said that before Rhee fell, she heard 3 distinct screams. She told investigators, "There was a fear in her second scream that made me feel sick and frightened for her. In the silence that followed, I prayed that someone had come to her rescue. When the 3rd scream came, I really can't explain how I felt." The 3rd scream was followed by a loud thud, which was presumably Rhee hitting the ground. Other neighbors reported that they had heard several screams, as well as raised voices which sounded like an argument. As investigators were trying to piece together what happened in Gable's apartment, Rhys' friends were struggling to come to terms with their loss. They all flocked to Rhys' Facebook to offer condolences and fond memories. Savannah Lisa, who had hung out with Rhys in her final days, posted, "Though my heart aches for you and my mind is still adjusting to the fact that you are gone, I will always cherish the best moments I have had with you while you were here. I will never forget you, my dearest friend, who I love and keep close to my heart forever." Rhys had been scheduled to fly home just 2 days later, but instead, her family were now planning to have her body returned to them. Her sister Reza would make a tearful plea for information on national television.
My name is Marisa. I'm here to talk about my sister Reza, who was taken from me last night. My sister was a very private person, and it is very hard for me to talk about her. She would really hate all of this attention about her. Rhys was the most important person in my world. Most of the time we only had each other to rely on. She was a very beautiful, intelligent, caring person who not only was my sister, but she was my best friend. Rhys was a strong supporter for animal rights and protection, and she stood by her convictions. Rhys was always a funny, practical joker who constantly kept me and my friends entertained and happy. It is hard for me facing the loss of my sister without knowing what happened in the last hours of her life. I hope that if anyone in the community has any information to help me.
Rhys' death came as a massive shock to both the community in Australia and in New Zealand where she lived. While it was revealed that Gable had spoken with investigators, it wasn't revealed what he had said or what had transpired the night that Rhys died. Many people were desperate to figure out who Gable was. It would soon be revealed that Gable was quite well known in the area, but not for the right reasons. In fact, he had been banned from at least 2 Surfers Paradise nightclubs. After Gable was released from police custody, he holed himself up at his parents' home, in a gated community in Carrara. Any attempts to reach for the family by media were unsuccessful, and his parents, Gray and Helen Tosti, said that they were too distraught to speak. Shortly thereafter, however, Gable posted on an online bodybuilding forum. He wrote, "I've been advised not to go into details, but all I will say is that I absolutely did not cause this girl to fall, and that I am devastated about what happened to her." As it would soon be discovered, Gable was quite a regular poster on the bodybuilding forum. In one thread, he had earlier complained about a girl refusing to have sex with him, while in another, he bragged about sleeping with around 150 girls over the years, adding that he had slept with 28 so far in 2014. In fact, in the post where he had complained about a girl refusing to sleep with him, he even posted her photograph on the forum. Along with this story, he claimed he said to one girl, "Well, considering the mood and the fact that we were sucking each other's faces off for all that time, then you followed me into the bedroom, what did you think would be the next logical step?" In July, he had posted about a girl who was 7 years his junior, who he referred to as a head case, and even a young slut. He complained that he had brought the girl back to his apartment, but she had turned down his advances. He said, "She's small, so I go to hug her and lift her up and take her inside from the balcony, and she totally freaks out, mumbles something about getting back to her parents, and bolts out the door." In another posting, Gable defended his criticism of women who turned down his advances, writing, "By the way, I've never complained that women are whores, nor have I ever been in a serious relationship or been cheated on. In fact, I wish more women were whores." It was evident that Gable felt as though he was God's gift to women. A woman who had spoken to Gable over Tinder spoke with a current affair. Stephanie Angus said that Gable had contacted her around 10 months prior with the message, "Roses are red, violets are blue, I have a gun, now get in my van." Just days after Ree's death, Gable was back on Tinder. Just the following day, Detective Superintendent Hutchinson announced that they were investigating the screams and commotion coming from inside Gable's apartment, moments before Ree fell to her death. Furthermore, they had seized Gable's mobile phone and uncovered that he had secretly recorded the conversations between him and women he brought home. In the past, he had posted on the bodybuilding forum, "I have actually kept a written log with dates and names. I'm somewhat obsessed with recording everything. I have motion detection cameras inside my house, call recordings on my phone, and sometimes even leave my phone on record in my pocket for nights out, in case I forget what happens." While Gable had posted that he had motion detection cameras, investigators discovered that this was in his old apartment. It had been hoped that if Gable had rigged his apartment, then potentially the footage could have captured what led to Ree's death. But sadly, that wasn't the case. Then on the 14th of August, Gable was arrested and charged with the murder of Ree. His lawyer, Michael Purcell, released a statement which read, "My client has been arrested and charged today by Queensland Police and been lodged at the Watch House. He has exercised his right to silence and he maintains his innocence, and he will be defending the charge." According to investigators, they had a compelling case against Gable, which included the discovery of recordings of interaction between Gable and Ree. The following day, Gable appeared in court, where it was revealed that CCTV footage from the apartment complex lobby showed that after Ree fell to her death, Gable hid behind a pillar as police surrounded her body. He can be seen pacing back and forth before getting into the lift, riding to the basement and then fleeing from the scene. It was also revealed that a neighbour of Gable had heard Ree shouting, "No, no, no, I just want to go home." Investigators were alleging that Ree had been assaulted by Gable and had feared for her life. They suggested that Gable had locked Ree on the balcony and she had attempted to climb to the balcony below Gable's balcony to get away from him and had fallen to her death. While they acknowledged that Gable probably didn't push Ree, they pointed to previous case law when announcing the murder prosecution. In 1986, Kelly Healy fell to her death while climbing out of a sixth floor window in a bid to flee from her boyfriend, Kim Royal. While Kim did not push Kelly, he was charged with her murder because she had died trying to escape from him. Detective Superintendent Hutchinson said, "Case law shows that not being pushed can be murder. We are relying on precedents to justify this case." Following the revelation, a number of Gable's friends rallied around him and supported him on social media. His friend, Tony Ongart, wrote, "No matter how much hate from the media our mate gets, we always stick by our mates till the end, including Gable Tosti. There is no physical evidence that accuses him of being guilty. So go hate as much as you want, we don't care. It won't change our decision." The following week, it was revealed that Gable would be applying to the Supreme Court for bail. As Gable was preparing for his bail hearing, a police affidavit was released, which gave more information into the evidence investigators had collected against him. Gable had audio recorded his interactions with Ree that night. The recording was 3.5 hours long, and at first, Gable and Ree can be heard socializing and listening to music.
Come here, chill, have a drink. I poured that for you. I'll show you. You'll be impressed.
But
that's cannibalism. I got better food than your foot.
My foot's yummy.
Chill and have a drink. I'll show you my favorite house that I built. You'd like it.
Say it.
It's a gay song, eh?
Yes, I am. Bye.
Hey, do you want to come to my work tomorrow?
Do you want to come to my family tomorrow?
Sure.
Then, at around 2:13 a.m, a struggle breaks out. Ree can be heard accusing Gable of stealing her phone, while Gable says, "I should never have given you so much to drink. I thought that we were going to have fun. I am the one who is injured, and you don't have a goddamn scratch on you." He then said, "Do you even remember what you were doing to me half an hour ago? You were beating me up for no reason. You thought it was funny or something." Gable can be heard saying, "That's enough. You have worn out your welcome. You need to leave." Ree sounds extremely out of breath.
That's really funny.
That's enough. That is more than enough. You've worn out your welcome. You're not my kind of girl. That's enough. Right. You have to leave.
Okay. It's all good. He knows. He's just so good.
I'm a nice girl.
It's not about who you need. It's not about who.
Yeah, it is. You're fucking insane.
It's not about who you need. It's about who you. Give a shit now. Baby. Fuck.
I thought you were only kidding, but you're not.
You're gonna poo.
You poo. Go on. Right now. I do need a sample of DNA. See, I thought you were kidding, and I've taken enough. This is fucking bullshit.
It is evident that there is some kind of struggle going on as Ree repeats, "It's all good." Gable then tells Ree that he is going to evict her without her belongings.
I'm gonna let you go. I'm gonna walk you out of this apartment. Just the way you are. You're not going to collect any belongings or anything, you're just going to walk out. And I'm going to slam the door on you. You understand? If you try to pull anything, I'll knock you out. I'll knock you the fuck out. Do you understand? Do you understand? Do you understand?
The struggle then becomes more intense, as Ree can be heard pleading, "I'm so sorry." To which Gable replies with, "I don't care." Ree can then be heard struggling for breath as if her airway is restricted, while Gable can be heard repeating, let go of it."
Come on, get up. Get up! Fuck up. Get up! Okay, get up. You don't understand, do you? You don't understand anything at all, do you? You don't understand. You don't understand, do you? You just don't understand. Let go. You think you can hit me and I'll just like fall down like in the movies? Huh? You don't understand, do you? Let go of it. Let go. Let go.
Let go.
The choking sounds can be heard for around a minute before the struggle intensifies once again. A door can be heard sliding open before Ray screams, "No," repeatedly.
Who the fuck do you think you are?
No!
Hmm?
No! No! No!
You're trying to kill me, huh?
No!
Why'd you try to hit me with that?
No!
Huh?
No! 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 No!
Fucking mouth.
No! 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 No!
It's all on recording,
no!
You know?
No!
It's all being recorded.
A door can be heard sliding shut as Ray's screams become fainter. It is evident at this point that Ray is outside on the balcony, and around 26 seconds later, a fading scream could be heard, followed by a thud. After Ray fell to her death, Gable called his father.
Hello, Dad. I might have a bit of a situation. See, I met up with a girl for a date tonight, and she started getting really aggressive. Like, it was alright at first, and like, we, you know, had sex in bed, and then after that, like, she kept drinking, and we were both drinking, and she, like, I think she thought it was like a joke or something, but she kept, like, beating me up and whatever. Yeah, and it was because she was really drunk, and like I forced her out on the balcony, and I think she might have jumped off. Like, I've been walking around and there like a million cops around my building. I'm fucked. I don't know what to do. Hey. Like where? I didn't cause this. Like I didn't push her or anything. I'm like just walking around the area, and there's like a million cops around the area. This is really fucked up. I'm like next to Domino's. I didn't. This wasn't my fault. I didn't do this. I was giving her my alcohol, but she was really violent, and I don't know. I like tackled her on my floor inside the building, and then but I never forced her over the balcony. God no, I'd never do anything like that. Dad, this is really, really fucked up. Why does this shit keep happening to me? Like, I'd...
Gable then ordered himself a pizza within the hour. Gable's parents offered to sell their home as surety to secure Gable's freedom, but investigators were strongly opposing to his bail and arguing that he had a callous disregard for human life. During the bail hearing that followed, a judge warned that it would be difficult to prosecute Gable for murder, if it could not be proved that he was on the balcony when Ree fell to her death. Justice Deborah Mullen said that there was a reasonably strong case for manslaughter depending on what happened in the apartment beforehand. She told defence barrister Tony Kimmins, "If your client was not on the balcony, it makes a murder case a lot more difficult. But in the context of what happened in the apartment, I would think a manslaughter case is not weak." Crown prosecutor Sarah Farndon said that it was likely that Gable wasn't on the balcony when Ree plunged to her death. It would also be revealed that Gable's neighbour, Emily Ellis, who lived two floors below Gable, had overheard the commotion. She said that she woke up to the sounds of furniture crashing, heavy objects being dropped, and a woman repeatedly shouting, "No." She heard a woman who sounded extremely scared say, "I just want to go home. Please let me go home." She said that after hearing the noise, she went outside to her balcony. She said to investigators, "I then moved to the corner of my balcony and tried to look up to see what was happening above me. I could see a girl climbing over the balcony from the unit above us. All I could see of her was her legs. One minute she was above me, and then the next she was in front of me, and then she was on the ground down the bottom." The court documents revealed that when Gable came into the police station the day after Reed's death, he had scratches and red marks on his face, back, neck, hand and leg. The bail application was adjourned to allow time to address the fact that Gable was diagnosed with autism. Justice Mullins had said that she was inclined to deny Gable bail, but said that his autism could explain his lack of sociability and may not be an irrelevant matter. Gable would ultimately be denied bail. Just days later, Gable somehow posted on his Facebook account. He wrote, "I have been in custody for almost a month now for a crime I did not commit, and have lost contact with almost everyone. I maintain my absolute innocence and hope that this nightmare will be over soon." He shared his address and encouraged people to write to him. In early October, Gable got rid of his lawyers and hired prominent civil liberties lawyers from leading Brisbane firm Robertson O'Gorman. Following the change of lawyers, attorney Kate Clark appeared in court, where she ordered police to deliver evidence within 2 weeks. This evidence included transcripts from the audio recordings and other analysis from Gable's phone, as well as copies of Ree's autopsy report, and more than 50 witness statements. HelloFresh cuts out the stresses of meal planning and trips to the grocery store. If you're like me, you always end up buying produce that you don't use. With HelloFresh, you can enjoy cooking and eating and get dinner on the table in just 30 minutes or less. I've just placed an order for my HelloFresh box, and the website is super simple to use. You can select from over 23 recipes each week, which feature a range of flavours and ingredients, so there's something for everybody. You can also easily skip any week you don't want a HelloFresh box or change your delivery date. With HelloFresh, eating good couldn't be any simpler. I'm a vegetarian while my other half is a meat eater, and HelloFresh caters to both of us. They offer meals for those who may want to be eating a bit healthier with low carb and carb smart options, as well as pescatarian options. So if you'd like to join HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit, and make midweek meals a walk in the park, then go to HelloFresh.com/Morbidology10 and use code Morbidology10 for 10 free meals, including shipping. That is 10 free meals, including shipping, at HelloFresh.com/Morbidology10. Is there something interfering with your happiness, or are you apprehensive about reaching out for help? BetterHelp is here to help you, and they're today's sponsor of Morbidology. BetterHelp is not self-help, it's professional counselling available to you online or over the phone. BetterHelp is more affordable and accessible than traditional offline counseling, and they offer financial aid. Sadly, sometimes traditional offline counseling is not locally available for everybody, but BetterHelp is available for clients worldwide. They have licensed professional counselors specializing in a broad variety of areas, including depression, sleeping, self-esteem, grief, and much more. Everything you share with your counselor is confidential and they are matched to your specific needs. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com/morbidology. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp.com/morbidology. The following month, Gable's new attorneys attempted once more to get him bail. During the bail hearing, public prosecutor Ben Power strongly opposed to the bail. He said that Gable may have piled Ree with homemade alcohol before her death. He said, "There is strong evidence that the victim was very intoxicated, and it appears that the source of that was home-stilled alcohol, or white spirit, that he had given her." He drew their attention to an alternative definition of murder that deals with an unlawful act with a likelihood of death rather than deliberate intention to kill. He said that the dangerous act was shoving an intoxicated person onto a balcony and locking it behind them. Prosecutor Power likened it to locking somebody in a box, leading them to suffocate. Defense lawyer Soraya Ryan refuted this and said that Gable locked Ree on the balcony to separate himself from her, and that he did not intend to kill her. She said, "The threat she may have feared was not real." In arguing for bail, she said that Gable was unlikely to flee before the trial. She also submitted bail conditions that would keep Gable away from Tinder and alcohol and adhere to a 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. curfew. Judge Mullins responded by saying that Gable's intentions were not relevant under the second definition of murder, and it would be up to a jury to decide this during a trial. She also said that the case was not straightforward. She decided that she would grant Gable bail. When granting bail, she revealed that Gable had been treated by a psychiatrist since 2009 for insecure social anxiety, obsessive compulsive disorder and depression, which could have influenced his actions that night, as well as his autism diagnosis. Following Gable's release, he once again took to the online bodybuilding forum to relay his version of events in a post titled "Regarding the Balcony Tragedy." He wrote how he was not involved in Ray's death at all. He wrote that he was devastated by Ray's death and couldn't crack a smile for weeks. He wrote, "The death of Warina was the most tragic and distressing event I have ever experienced. My night with Warina was intended to be relaxed and fun. Knowing I was the last person to be with her, it has left me permanently scarred. And not a day passes that I don't wish I could go back in time and prevent it." He lambasted the media for portraying him as a villain. Shortly thereafter, Gable once again got rid of his lawyers and hired Nick Doerr from Fisher Doerr Lawyers. He appeared in court with his new lawyer, where they requested the case be pushed back. Both the defense and the prosecution had been waiting for executives from Tinder to deliver key parts of the evidence brief, which would include Gable's conversation with women on the app. While both the defense and the prosecution were preparing for trial, Gable was posting dating advice on the bodybuilding forum. In a post, another user had asked for advice on how to date an older woman that he had contacted through Plenty of Fish, which was another dating app. Gable suggested that the man tell the woman, "I can do things to you that will make you feel 21. Then on the 2nd of February, Gable was back in court to face the earlier charges of leading police on a high-speed car chase. He looked extremely shocked as the judge sentenced him to 10 months in jail. However, it was announced that he would serve 6 months before being paroled. Just the following day, it was announced that Gable had changed his name by DePaul to Eric Thomas. In April, Gable appealed his sentence, but the appeal was denied. He was released in July, ready to face murder charges. That evening, he posted on Facebook a photograph of the Terminator with the words, "I'm back." Later, he posted on Facebook once again. He wrote, "I don't think I will ever adjust to the nightmarish reality that I wake up to each day. The fact that I was charged with murder after someone attacked me in my own home is sheer lunacy. It is disturbing and wrong. I may not be a saint, but I would never dream of hurting a woman. I am nothing like the villain fabricated by the media." He also wrote that he would not be pleading guilty to the downgraded charge of manslaughter. In early October, it was announced that the murder trial had stalled after the prosecution failed to comply with evidence legislation that hasn't kept up with technology. Magistrate Chris Callaghan said that the prosecution's brief of evidence needed to be submitted in full instead of as an index to the files online. In April of the following year, it was announced that Gable would be standing trial for Ree's murder in September. Shortly thereafter, Gable was posting more advice on dating. This time, he was posting on a private Facebook group called Bloke's Advice, and he was offering advice on how to seduce women on Tinder. The murder trial finally begun on the 10th of October 2016. During opening statements, prosecutor Glenn Cash explicably stated that Gable had not thrown Ree off the balcony to her death, but instead that he had intimidated and threatened her to an extent that she felt the only way to escape from him was to try and climb down from his balcony to the balcony below. Prosecutor Cash detailed how Gable had become angry with Ree after she threw ornamental rocks at him and hit him with a telescope. He stated that Gable then choked and restrained Ree before locking her on the balcony. Ree's mother, Beth, broke down in tears as he said that she had been choked during the ordeal.
"See, I thought you were kidding, and I've taken enough. This is fucking bullshit. You're lucky I haven't chucked you off my fucking balcony, you goddamn psycho little bitch. Who the fuck do you think I am? Yeah, do your Muay Thai now. What? What? Got something to say? Say it.
Yeah.
Say it. What?
Said I'm sexist.
Yeah, right. I'm the one who's injured. You don't have a goddamn scratch on you, you little bitch.
Seriously, I didn't."
"Seriously, what?"
The prosecutor played out a recording wherein Ree could be heard asking to leave several times. At one point she says, "Are you going to fucking untie me? Because I will fucking destroy your jaw." They spoke about God and death and restated, "I'm not scared of shit. I'm all good with dying. I know you want to kill me because you told me so." He then told the jury that Gable's neighbour, Gabrielle Coyler-Wiedner, said that at around 2 a.m. she was awoken to the sound of banging furniture. She said that she looked out of her balcony, which was just below Gable, and saw a pair of feet dangling down from the balcony above. She testified, "I froze there, then the body fell on my balcony railing. I screamed, and somebody else screamed. I assumed it was her voice." Defense lawyer Saul Holt said that Ree had become increasingly erratic and aggressive towards Gable after a night of drinking. He told the jury, "What happened in this case is nothing like murder or manslaughter. It doesn't fit." He said that Gable had put Ree on the balcony and locked the door. He further said that Gable was well within his legal rights to use reasonable force, and that he hadn't choked Ree. He said that Ree's death was a tragedy, but said that sympathy was not how cases were decided. On the opening day of the trial, the last photographs of Ree was shown. Just hours before she died, she had posed on Gable's balcony alongside Gable in a selfie. She excitedly sent the photograph to her sister on Facebook and boasted that she had met a guy that looked like one of the stars from their favourite TV show, Supernatural. This would be the last time that anybody in the family had ever heard from Ree. Her sister Reza was the first witness of the trial. She fought back tears as she told the jury of the last conversation she had with her sister. In the photographs, Gable is topless and they both look happy and relaxed. However, in a later photograph, Ree's body language looks very different. She isn't smiling and she looks extremely uneasy. Gabrielle Coyler-Wiedner was then called to testify. She identified her apartment and said that Gable lived in the apartment above. She was evidently distressed as she detailed what happened that night. She spoke about how she had heard furniture being moved around and then something heavy hitting the ground. She testified, "Then I heard the female voice screaming, 'No,' in a panic, before seeing Ree dangling her legs over the balcony." Her testimony was followed by testimony of Nick Casey, who was with his friends in an apartment two floors below Gable's apartment. He said that they heard loud noises and commotion coming from above, and then saw Ree clambering onto the balcony ledge. He told the jury, "I heard her say, 'I want to go home.' I heard her say, 'Help.' At that point, I said to her to go back inside. It wasn't long after that she fell. She fell straight past where I was standing on the balcony and two balconies below us, ricocheted off." Following this, more of the recording from that night was played out. It clearly showed that there was some kind of altercation that night with Ree throwing rocks at Gable and hitting him with a telescope, telling him to bow down. At first, Gable plays along before finally snapping and ordering Ree out of his apartment and telling her to stop hurting him.
They're not real. They're only fake. Oh my God, that's... she's insane. Alright, I give up. What do you want? What do I have to do?
Oh! It was him.
Do what?
Why don't you understand?
Oh! What?
Why don't you understand, Dick?
Alright, I'll bow down. No.
Manchester!
Oh, I'll do what you want. Sexually, I'll be your slave.
Manchester!
Who?
I'm fucking Jesse, you fucking...
Who's Manchester fucking...
Digga!
Alright,
that's enough. No, that's enough.
Ree can be heard screaming, "No," 33 times, as well as, "Just please let me go home." Gable is heard replying, "I would, but you have been a bad girl." Her muffled screams can be heard as a balcony door closes. Gable can then be heard breathing very heavily before calling his father, Gary, and telling him, "We might have a bit of a situation." He goes on to tell his father that he had sex with a girl who became really aggressive and he tackled her to the floor. He then said, "I forced her out onto the balcony and I think she might have jumped off. I didn't cause this. I didn't push her or anything. Dad, this isn't my fault. I didn't do this. I never forced her off the balcony. The last thing I do is hurt a girl." The messages on Tinder that Ree and Gable had shared were presented as evidence during the trial. Gable had told Ree that he turns into a porn star after a few drinks. He also told her that she looked delicious before adding, "I want to do dirty things to you." Ree responded by asking if those pickup lines had worked in the past, to which Gable replied, "Haha, I'm not trying to make anything work, I'm just saying. Got a problem with that?" Ree told Gable that she could be a freak in the sheets, depending on how much she had to drink. Photographs of Gable taken the following day were also shown. He had cuts on his arms and legs, as well as red marks on his left cheek, and an abrasion near his nose. Dr. Nell Van Buren testified that it was impossible to determine how or when they had occurred. Her testimony was followed by Diane Little, the pathologist who had conducted the autopsy on Ree. She described how Ree had suffered 80 separate injuries, and that severe injuries to all of her body had caused her death. She said that as she fell from the 14th floor balcony, her body almost folded over on itself. Her head had been hyperflexed down towards her trunk. She told the jury that Ree had a blood alcohol level of 0.156. She further stated that there were poorly defined red marks on Ree's neck, which were not consistent with any application of force. Under cross-examination by Gable's defence, Dr. Little said that Ree had multiple scars on her wrists that were consistent with self-inflicted wounds. During closing statements, defence attorney Saul Holt said that Gable was a gentleman that night towards an erratic Ree. He urged the jury to examine the evidence that was presented and described the case as a first date gone horribly wrong. He told the jury that the case the prosecution had presented was weak and said that Ree was irrational and unreasonable and made her own decision to climb to her certain death. He acknowledged that his client certainly had restrained Ree, but the reason in doing so was in a bid to get her to drop the metal telescope that she had hit him with. He clearly tells her to drop it as she is gurgling. During his closing arguments, prosecutor Glenn Cash said that Gable had caused Ree's death as much as if he had pushed her from the balcony. He stated that they believed that the tall and muscular Gable had held the small and petite Ree down on the ground with his body weight after she pelted him with small ornamental rocks. He said that the anger in Gable's voice was evident as he called Ree names and threatened to knock her out and throw her off the balcony. He also said that the fear in Ree's voice was evident as she apologised and pleaded to go home. While the evidence showed that there was no strangulation, during the audio recording, Ree can be heard gasping for air and gurgling for 45 seconds. The prosecution suggested that Gable had cut off her air supply by putting his weight on her chest or restraining her with his forearm. Turning to the jury, the prosecutor stated, "So if you're satisfied there was a choking, a strangling, obstruction of her breathing over such a long period of time, you would conclude from that intent, at that point, to cause her some grievous bodily harm." He said that while there was no evidence of strangulation, there are some methods of restraint that don't leave marks. He ended by stating that Ree was experiencing so much terror, bordering on hysteria, that it was foreseeable that she would have climbed over the balcony to try and escape. Following the closing arguments, the jury were sent away to deliberate. To convict Gable of murder, they must find that he intended to cause Ree grievous bodily harm by choking her before forcing her out onto his balcony. After deliberating for several days, the jury told Justice John Byrne that they were unable to reach a verdict. He responded by telling them to continue deliberating because discharging a jury was a last resort. The following day, the jury returned with a verdict and acquitted Gable Tosti of both murder and manslaughter. Outside of court, Deborah Taylor from the Queensland Homicide Victim Support Group read out a statement on behalf of Rhys' family. They said that the situation was incredibly traumatic and that they requested privacy as they attempted to pull the pieces of their own lives back together. Following the verdict, the opinion of people was very much divided. Ultimately, no matter what verdict they reached, there would have been people extremely unsatisfied on both sides, which highlighted the polarity in this case. Many people believe that Gable scared Rhys so much that she felt the only way she could get away was to climb out onto the balcony below. Others believe that Rhys had started the argument by attacking Gable, and that he placed her on the balcony to protect himself and to de-escalate the situation. In the November after his release, Gable was paid a six-figure sum by 60 Minutes Australia for an interview.
So when that jury came back and said not guilty, that must have been a huge relief for you.
Absolutely. It was... They took their time, but, you know, at the end of the day, they made the right decision.
Were you worried?
Well, it doesn't matter how innocent a person is. There's absolutely no comfort in being on trial for murder.
I noticed at one stage you boasted of sleeping with 180 different girls.
Wasn't intended to be a boast or anything. And those sorts of figures, you know, in this day and age, I'm not sure they're really that uncommon among a lot of guys.
What do you think, a lot of guys?
A lot of single guys. Yeah, it's not really a surprising figure.
During the interview, Gable was questioned about the disturbing recording.
We heard Warina scream no 33 times, and she was begging to go home. Why didn't you just use the front door?
You mean after I disarmed her?
Whenever. You had multiple opportunities.
Well, the first thing I did was try to make her walk out the front door.
But you restrained her again?
After she took the clamp.
For the second time, you had control of her, and you still chose not to use the front door. Why didn't you just use the front door?
Because that's only a question that you can ask in hindsight when you have to desperately get someone away from you and separate the two of you and try and de-escalate an altercation. It doesn't come into the equation that that person is going to climb off a balcony and fall 14 floors to their death.
He was also asked why he didn't check on Rhys after she fell from his balcony.
Instinctively, I knew that if I ran out there and somebody saw me looking over the edge and she had actually fallen all the way, it would look like, you know, it would not look good. It would look like I had forced her over or something.
So you were worried about what it would look like for you?
Of course I was worried about her. I was absolutely terrified at what had just happened to her, but, you know...
You just told me that you were a kind and caring guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
You couldn't even be bothered to go out on the balcony and look over the side and see what had happened to her.
Well, whatever had happened out there had happened, and looking over the edge, you know, that it doesn't help anybody. There's no purpose to it.
In the wake of Rhys Wright's death, Tinder was thrust into the spotlight for the dangers that it can expose people to. Somebody can be whoever they want on the internet, and sometimes that doesn't really correlate with who they are in real life. While Gable Tosti is an extremely unlikable person, many people felt as though the evidence presented did not deserve a first-degree murder conviction, just like Rhys Wright did not deserve to die after going out on a Tinder date. During the murder trial, the jury were given a case that was almost too complex. These were regular people who were asked to assess the reasonableness of two people who were acting extremely unreasonable. Well, guys, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so much for listening. I'd like to say a massive thank you to my new Patreon supporters, Miranda, Jimmy Lee Thompson, Lisa Heffley, and Yasmin Klefstad. Morbidology is a one-woman podcast, and the support on Patreon helps to defray the costs of freedom of information requests, archive subscriptions, hosting, and much more. In return, you get exclusive episodes of Morbidology Plus, which aren't on the regular podcast platforms. Early release episodes, ad-free episodes, true crime articles, and you can even request a case for me to cover on the podcast. You can sign up annually and get 15% off. Big thank you to everybody who has simply listened to an episode, commented on an episode, shared an episode, followed me on social media. All of the support is very much appreciated. As I'm sure you're bored of me saying, I have a new investigative podcast series called The Shattered Window. It takes a look at the unsolved murder of Jacqueline Dwallaby over the course of 10 episodes. We had access to case files and conducted hours of interviews with those integral to the case. So please subscribe to The Shattered Window wherever you're listening to Morbidology. Also make sure you visit us at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read our true crime articles. And stay tuned to the end of this episode to hear a promo for the amazing true crime podcast, Speaking of Crime. Until next time, stay safe, take care of yourselves, and have a happy new year.
I'm John Gulley, and I'm a true crime audiobook narrator.
And I'm true crime author Jeffrey Dean Doty.
And we're your hosts for the true crime podcast, Speaking of Crime.
We both have been fascinated by crime, criminals,
and people who investigate them
ever since we were young.
And that's been a long time.
As a true crime writer, I'm used to asking questions and getting answers.
As a narrator, I'm used to talking about crime and discussing cases with authors.
You'll be surprised by the cases we cover
and by the people we talk to.
So we hope you listen every week as we delve deep into the world of crime and talk to the people involved.
You can find Speaking of Crime on Podbean, Apple Podcast, Spotify, or almost anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Join us for the show So Good It's Criminal.
Take my advice and give us a try. You'll thank me later.